Welcome to On the Beat, where we bring you a different Buffalo Bills beat reporter every week, exclusively on the Overreaction Sports Network.
Well, what is going on, everybody? Welcome. Welcome, everybody, to On the Beat, brought to you exclusively on the Overreaction Sports Network, a show where we bring you an exclusive interview with a different Bills beat reporter or journalist every week, and we talk about the topics swirling around our beloved Buffalo Bills. I am Joe Miller, and you can find me on Twitter at Joe Miller Wired, alongside my co-host for this show, former Buffalo Bills offensive tackle John Fina. You can find him on Twitter at John Fina. We are excited that you are here with us. Please do us a favor. Please like, please subscribe, whatever platform you are consuming this episode on. Please make sure you subscribe and give us a like, comment if you can, or even give us, I don't know, a review. That would be great. But as we always like to say, whether this podcast finds you around a cup of coffee, at the gym with your AirPods in, on the drive to work, or watching us live right now, let us just say together, welcome. I'm excited as today we are joined by a guy whom I consider a great friend. He is a huge Bills fan with a huge football knowledge base, all-around awesome guy and fellow girl dad, Locked On Bills host, and my man, Joe Marino. Joe, how are you today?
Gentlemen, I'm doing well. Appreciate you guys having me, and excited for the launch of the Overreaction Network. I wish you guys great success and excited to be, you know, one of the early guests. I'm not sure I'm like a beat reporter or a journalist though, but I'm glad to be here.
You're all of it. You're an amalgam of everything.
Oh gosh. John's already dropping words I never heard of. So exactly. Get my dictionary open here so I can keep up.
You should be in the group chat with me, him and Jerry. Like sometimes he says,
I'm in one of those. And sometimes John's cooking things I've never heard of. I'm afraid to ask questions. I mean, but good to be here.
It's so true. John, how are you feeling today?
I'm feeling pretty good, man. I mean, I'm just excited to anytime I get to visit with the Joes in the 3J show. And then when Jerry's on the 4J show, that's right. This draft has really got me excited. There's just so many directions to go. So I can't wait to peel back the onion a little bit and just really dig into Joe's brain, Joe Marino's brain, and see what's in there, if anything.
Yeah, it's an exciting time for Joe specifically. Joe Marino, it's normally 365 days of buildup, right, to this moment. 360 is we're just a couple of days away. Any sense of relief? Like knowing that, like, is there a relief for you? It's like, oh, I could like take 10 minutes and breathe, or is it like, gotta start right over?
No, dude, it's insane. Yeah, the relief is real. And the last 2 years, I haven't been full time in the draft space. And that, you know, it was like a 365 day a year thing for me. Now I start in like December, but even this December through literally yesterday was when I finished evaluating prospects. Being done, man, there is a huge collective sigh of relief, because no matter what you have going on, there's always this piece of you that feels like you're supposed to be watching a player and evaluating a player and putting them on the board. And it is a real thing that's on your mind continuously. And I know that people expect a lot from me when it comes to draft stuff. So I certainly carry that burden. So you say relief, that's absolutely the correct word to be done evaluating prospects for this draft.
Well, to bring you up to speed on where we've been for our draft week, as you already mentioned, this is kind of a launch of this network, and we've been going for a couple of weeks, and we are full tilt for draft week. We had Billy Connedy on Sunday, former Buffalo Bill, and Mitch Morse's current agent, and we talked a little bit of draft. We talked about, obviously, the needed center and just kind of how that went with Mitch. Yesterday, the Monday program, Jerry Ostrowski interviewed RJ Young, Fox Sports analyst, college analyst RJ Young, and they went deep into wide receivers. Today we're going to talk draft as well, and then I got Mookie Hawkins on tomorrow on Wednesday to kind of like put some final touches on just rumors surrounding the Bills, rumors surrounding the draft, what he's hearing just from a beat standpoint. But very much with your schedule, new baby, just everything that's going on in the Joe Marino household and in the Joe Marino Locked On life, super appreciative to have you here. Let's start talking just as far as just what you think, what you feel, and let's literally start like just kind of at the wide receiver, just kind of recap RJ Young yesterday. You know, RJ basically, as we all feel, there's an aspect of like, there's three that are kind of like out of reach, right? There's the three, the top three tier guys, Marvin Harrison Jr., Rome, like some of those guys that are just out of reach. And then what was striking to me, and I'd love to get your take, is that the Bills wanted to move up a couple spots. He was high on Brian Thomas Jr. He called him a backyard baller. As far as that goes, like if you're looking for a guy that can like run off script the way that Josh Allen plays, he was like, this is your guy. He was high on Troy Franklin and Xavier Worthy. I'd love to just get kind of a breakdown and a take from you that if the Bills moved up 4, 5, 6 spots, if they're there, where you kind of land on those three dudes.
I wouldn't trade up for any of them. I think they'd be fine selections at pick 28. We'll start with Brian Thomas, who, I don't know if you made me say, what player do you think the Bills are going to pick in the draft? I think Brian Thomas has a very, very high likelihood, and that could include a trade up. I don't know that they'd be able to stick and pick him at 28. So there's a big difference between what I would do and what I think the team will do. But Brian Thomas certainly would give this team size and speed down the field. I mean, he can run by people. He's over 200 pounds, and he's got very good deep ball tracking ability. Mm-hmm. And I think it's a great call out. If you're looking for somebody that is adept at working the scramble drill, finding space, you know, on extended plays, he can certainly do that. And obviously he's got a ton of speed to run away from coverage. I could see there being a good marriage with him and Josh Allen, and, you know, playing with Jaden Daniels at LSU, Jaden Daniels very much likes to buy into some of the off script moments as well. So you could see the fit there. My concern with Brian Thomas is I wish he was a more complete player at this point. You watch him at LSU, ran a very limited route tree, and anything that is short and intermediate, you know, I think he's still developing. He still has to prove himself in that regard. I'm not saying he can't. He just wasn't asked to. And so I think there's an adjustment for him at the next level, being able to do more than just run by everybody and go catch the football, right? It's just a different ball game. So would add a great layer to the offense. Do want to see more of a complete skill set. But then, look, you couple it with this. You think about, you do have good underneath players in Kincaid and Shakir, Curtis Samuel, James Cook. When you have a field stretcher like that, it lifts the roof of the defense. So you have the vertical production plus how it helps your overall offensive spacing. I could certainly get behind the pick. You mentioned some other players whose names have escaped me because I spent so much time talking about Brian Thomas. Was it Xavier Worthy? Who was the other one?
Troy Franklin.
Okay, Xavier Worthy, wide receiver out of Texas, ran 4.21, the fastest 40-yard dash in the history of the NFL, right? Crazy. So everything I just said about Brian Thomas, apply that to Xavier Worthy with the vertical ability. What I really respect about Xavier Worthy, though, from his time at Texas, is for a guy that's 165 pounds, which should raise some eyebrows, that's concerning. He had a fair amount of volume on his plate across three seasons. It's not like he was a specialist. Yeah, he won down the field, but they weren't shy about getting him involved as like a bit of a guy that they'd funnel targets to, right? So you don't necessarily always see that from smaller receivers. You know, I think you just have to be concerned about the size. That's just the biggest thing there. It's tons of speed. The matchup problems he creates is very, very real. He's 165 pounds. Like, do yourself a favor. Look up the list of 165-pound receivers in the NFL that have had great careers. You're not going to be able to find very many, right?
So Roscoe Parrish comes to mind. Not great career, but small.
Right, you wouldn't want that at 28, right?
No.
I always find myself, like, if there's an exception, don't count on a guy being the exception. Like you want to give yourself the highest probability of getting a hit.
Yeah.
And counting on outliers is a dangerous thing. How many, every year we hear this guy's the next Deshaun Jackson, but somehow there's only ever been one Deshaun Jackson, right? So,
that's right.
The other guy's Troy Franklin. I don't love Troy Franklin. He is a pretty good route runner. I think he has pretty good hands. He's 6'1" and some change, 178 pounds. I mean, that is just a lean dude. And anything that requires him to be physical, he gets his butt kicked, right? Like, it just happens. Guys are able to jam him up at the line. If you ask him to block, he gets put on his butt. You know, guys are going to be physical with him at the top of routes or during the route stems, he can't play through it. So if you can give him two-way goes and free access and all that stuff, I think he can help you. But you're talking about a premium pick at 28. I need a more complete player that can win some heavyweight battles in the NFL.
Yeah.
Let me dovetail on what you just said, Mr. Marino, because I think a lot of people out there wonder, How much time, if you're rating 228 players or how many are in the draft, plus another 100 who could sneak into the draft, and you're trying to do a good job, you can't dedicate 2 hours to every player. How much film do you have to digest? Obviously, everybody posts their highlights. You can see everything they do well. You've got to dig and see where their shortcomings are to give them a valid rating on the Joe Marino, you know, schedule of who's it, right? So how do you assess that film? I know where you get it, but what kind of time do you put in? How does that work for you? I'm very interested in the mechanics of that.
It's a good question. So first of all, I did 170 prospects for this class, right? So if that's not, there's people who are going to do 250, 300 guys. Like, I can only do so many, especially now that this isn't my full-time focus. Right. So I did 170 prospects starting back at, I guess, really the end of November. And what I do is I have a 3-game minimum for every player. And I try to watch one in the beginning, one in the middle, one at the end to kind of get a feel for how they develop throughout the course of the season. And that makes sure that you're not getting like, all right, they had a weird ankle injury or something, right, you know, right, you get enough exposures. So it's a 3-game minimum, but then I just watch as much as I need to feel like I know who the player is. And let me start by saying this, like, I get stuff wrong all the time. I certainly have convictions in what I see and how I apply it. But, you know, if you haven't missed, then you haven't scouted. So, like,
right.
I hope that you can appreciate that I come from what I think is a good process, a diligent background. I do the best I can. I'm going to get stuff wrong, just like the NFL teams are. You want to go back and look at the draft 3, 4, 5 years ago. You'll be real sobered up by how the people at the highest level don't get this stuff right. So, I always reserve the right to be wrong, but it's a 3-game minimum. And then from there, it's okay. Do I feel like I can sufficiently grade the player on the 9 position specific traits that I have? So for every position, there are 9 different categories that I grade every single player. And I want to make sure, okay, if I give this guy a grade in this area, whether it's the release package for a receiver, ball skills, route running, yards after catch, have I seen enough that I can, with a level of conviction, put a number down? And so for some guys, 3 games is all I need. Some guys, I just like watching them. I'll watch a little bit more, but it's a 3-game minimum. But the overall idea, watch until you feel like you have them figured out.
Yeah, we're spending some time with Joe Marino here on the beat, talking just NFL draft. The entire Bills Mafia world is wrapped up in this wide receiver conversation. We talked about the top three. You've talked a little bit about the second tier guys. What's interesting to me, and we'll end the wide receiver chat here. What's interesting to me is the quarterback that Josh Allen is. Josh Allen, you know, John and Jerry had Greg Cosell on their show, I believe on the Fiendish show last year. And he said, you know, Josh Allen, while he's an accurate passer, is not really a precision, precise, quarterback. He's not going to be Kirk Cousins. He's not going to be the guy that Tom Brady that sits in the pocket and like is throwing anticipation throws. He waits for guys to flash open and then puts the ball on him, which is his strength. And it's a strength that basically only he has, which basically in turns requires him to have wide receivers that can get separation. Curtis Samuel, Cole Beasley, Stephon Diggs. Of the guys that aren't in that top six, is there, if the Bills decide to wait and they're like, we're not going to take a wide receiver round one, we're going to take somebody else, we're going to move back, who is later that you feel can be one of those flash open guys that Josh can paint with the football?
Yeah, first of all, I align completely with Greg Cosell in what he's saying there. Josh is a more visual player than he is an anticipatory player. That doesn't mean he doesn't have good anticipatory moments, but in the overall grand scheme of things, he's more of a visual player. So that's why getting separation guys is what is really important. And I would love for the Bills to get some size as well, but I think guys that can create space for themselves is what really matters. So beyond that first wave, I think Ricky Parasol out of Florida is definitely that. His quarterback was so bad at Florida, so it's tough to watch the tape. But the guy could create plenty of space, really, really good route runner. I think Ladd McConkey is that as well out of Georgia, more from the slot. I'm not sure he's got the physicality to be a consistent on the line of scrimmage player, but I do think he's a separation specialist. I'd also say getting even deeper down the list here, Jalen McMillan out of Washington is a player that I think definitely delivers that separation ability. So, yeah, beyond those top guys, those are some guys that I think can really win as route runners.
Very good. John, anything specific you want to ask? If the Bills were not to go wide receiver in the first round, specifically about the trenches?
Well, you know, this is a pretty cool draft for tackles, right? Yeah. I wish I had a podcast on it. I was with David Shaw last weekend, legendary coach, Stanford, in the NFL, and we talked O-line for like half an hour. I mean, talk about an experience, man, and just seeing eye to eye. And, you know, some of the things that he was talking about with offensive linemen, and I don't know if this is on your, you know, nine skills to observe, but he talked about how many guys in this draft who can go from a 3-point and pick up an edge rusher, right? How many guys can get that left or right foot back, hand off the ground, get to the position and track the inside shoulder, outside shoulder of a defensive end. So that's going to be kind of my new skill. New point to look at with offensive tackles. Cause I'd never heard it that way. And then when we're always looking at the draft, we're looking at the big tackles, an occasional center here and there, road grading guard. But my question to you is, we've seen some surprises in the draft recently. I think New England took a center a few years ago and everybody was like, whoa, I can't think of his name. Do you foresee any big surprises in the interior 1, 2, 3 that could come from, you know, maybe a fourth round pick? We see him in the second creep into, I don't know about creeping into the first because of the wide receiver pool, but what's your take? Any surprises on O-line?
Yeah, I like the question, John. Cole Strange is the name you're looking for there. I remember Travis Frederick when he was drafted by the Dallas Cowboys out of Wisconsin. Everybody lost their mind and thought this was the biggest reach of all time. He winds up being an absolute stud at the position right. for a number of years. So,
and it's no longer a reach. That's all it takes. It's like, oh, not a reach.
right. No, and that's the thing. Nobody's right or wrong when we wake up on Friday, Saturday, or Sunday. Like this takes years to learn.
Right. That's right.
But there is a guy. There is a guy, and I didn't ask John to ask me this question, but I'm glad you did.
That's true. He did not.
Zach Frazier out of West Virginia. This guy, whether it's Bills or somebody else, you can see a team falling in love with him. Big time starter, like all the experience in the world. He 4-time state champion wrestler. And then on his mom's side of the family, his grandfather and 3 uncles also state champion wrestlers. His dad was a football coach. Like
that's a McDermott guy right there. That's a McDermott guy.
Through and through. Not only that, he playing against Baylor this past year, the last game of the season. It's a 2-minute drill. West Virginia's down and they don't have any timeouts. The dude breaks his leg and gets his ass off the field. I don't know if I can say ass on this podcast. I did.
Sure.
Gets himself off the field and to avoid the 10-second runoff. West Virginia goes on to win the game.
Right.
Like toughness, wrestling background, pedigree. Is he, you watch his tape. I think he's a very good player. I don't think you're going to watch him and say, okay, this is a slam dunk first round pick, but
he moves up the board.
He really does. Mm-hmm. Like if that was a pick in the late first round, it would not surprise me in the least. I think that teams are going to fall in love with him through and through.
Let me add on to that question, Mr. Marino. You talked about now you want to draft a guy with a broken leg, right? I'm kidding. That's tongue in cheek. But do you have one of your 9 points of interest or grade on injury prone? A lot of things I hear about Michael Penix is the number of injuries he's had. And do you think that I went to the combine, I got poked and prodded in ways that I thought I could only pay to have done, but by and large, does that become a really big factor in how you grade and what you think the NFL looks at, or is medicine so great now guys are coming back from injuries?
You know, the injury stuff is so interesting because you've seen guys that had this, all the injuries in the world in college, and then they're healthy in the pros. Then you have guys like that are never injured in college that are injured in the NFL. Billy Price out of Ohio State, Eric Wood, never injured in the whole world, his whole time in Louisville, a million starts in a row. First couple years in the NFL. Yeah. It's unfortunate. So it's
Thurman hard. And Thurman Thomas is the glaring college guy, right?
Yeah. What the heck's that?
And was never injured in the pros, right?
So. How do you, make it make sense. So for my process, I also have what's called the discretionary 5, where I can take a player up or down 5 points based on factors, just like what you're talking about. Medicals, could be age, could be some off the field red flags, could be a player that, you know what, I don't necessarily think their football is great, but there's something about their makeup that I really do like and I can bump them up. So I do give myself a discretionary 5 points to be able to factor in those types of variables.
Super good. Wide receiver is obviously the glaring like issue. We've talked about it. I've said that already. There's other glaring holes on this team right now. Safety, defensive tackle, defensive end. We talked about center, right? If the Bills elect to not go wide receiver, if they elect to wait and they're like, look, you know, the guys that we would want to jump up and get are gone. We feel like we can maybe move back into the second or move down. But if they're gonna stay at 28, where do you see them going outside of wide receiver that would make you happy?
First of all, let's acknowledge that, like, I'm totally okay with the Bills not drafting a wide receiver at 28. So I'm glad you asked this question, because I'm not like wide receiver or bust by any means. Mm-hmm. I have so, and it's not because I don't want the Bills to add a receiver. I do. I just want it to make sense. I have 19 receivers graded in the first three rounds. I'm not panicking. I'm not panicking at all at wide receiver. There's going to be answers to be found. So would I like a receiver at 28? Sure. Yeah. But don't do it just to do it. Like, you still have that other areas of this football team that need help. So players that I would like, realistic players that I would be happy with at 28, that's not a receiver. First, and that, wait, you know, also there's receivers I wouldn't be happy with as well. So I feel like there's so many layers to it.
That's
Cooper DeJean, the safety out of Iowa.
That's my guy.
Absolute slam dunk first round pick. That guy's a baller. I mean, an absolute baller. Yeah. Athleticism, size, physicality. He takes away the football. Ball skills are unbelievable. Big time punt returner as well. Mm. I think it'd be an awesome pick. You could, any one of these top four edge rushers, I don't know if any of them get there. Leitu Latu, Dallas Turner, Jared Verse, Chop Robinson. I'd love any of those four at pick 28. I think the most likely would be Chop Robinson. When I think of this Bills roster, I feel like there's a lot of room for impact off the edge. I really like Greg Rousseau. I think he's a high quality starter. I don't know that he's a sack artist. You know, I look at AJ Epenesa. I think he's more of a defensive end 2.5, right? I'm not sure he's a 2. Who knows what you're getting out of Von Miller?
Right.
So yeah, I think there's plenty of room for impact off the edge. Chop Robinson would give them speed and flexibility in a big way. You could talk me into these defensive tackles. I don't think Byron Murphy sniffs 28, but maybe Johnny Newton, the defensive tackle out of Illinois. Those are some areas I would go. And then I think there's a case to be made for maybe interior offensive line. And, you know, you're planning to move Connor McGovern to center. Not something he's really ever done in the NFL. I'm not saying he can't do it, but I'm not going to assume that that's going to be seamless.
Right.
David Edwards is a player that I've pegged as a starting caliber player in the NFL. He started 4 games in the last 2 years. Maybe it's not a bad idea to have some hedges here over these transitions. You know, Lyle Collins, I mean, this dude hasn't been healthy in 3 years. So I think there's plenty of room to have good conversations about offensive line help.
For sure.
Joe, that makes me think about the whole discussion of, you know, go for the position or best available. And I think a lot of people get confused when they say best available athlete. I think when you don't have the guy that makes a sense, like for everybody wants a receiver who does, then when you talk about best available, it sort of fits into those top four positions, right? Mm-hmm. So just like you said, you got safety, receiver, defensive tackle, defensive end, you could throw offensive line in there. When the pick comes and the two or three dream guys that you had considered are not there, then is it the function of the team to say, all right, well, it's one of these five positions, we're going to take the best athlete within that group? It's not the broad scale of all, what is it, 10 positions on the field, right? Or 11 positions on the field.
Yeah, I think so. And one of my new phrases that I've kind of taken to this year is, we talk about drafting for need, we talk about drafting the best player available. I like the idea of drafting for opportunity, right? Like, look at what's available to you at that moment and what opportunity do you like the most to help your football team, right? Like, every player introduces a new skill set and a new layer to your operation. Which one do you like the most? Yeah. Now, certainly you're going to have players in buckets. These are our first round grades, second round grades. You want to pick players that are within the appropriate value of where you're selecting. Then from there, what player gives us the best opportunity to evolve our scheme or introduce a skill set to make us a better football team? And I think that's kind of the way that I like to look at it.
It seems like, and obviously, you know, you pay way more attention to this than I do. I'm not a draft Nick necessarily, but outside in, looking, you know, as a fan, it seems like the Bills don't do best player available. They don't do like what, you know, what they, they don't do holes that we have to fill necessarily either. It feels like this team falls in love with a guy and goes and gets him.
Oh, the court. That's absolutely true. I mean, trading up for Kyrie Elam, trading up for Dalton Kincaid, trading up for Tremaine Evans, Josh Allen. Like, so Bean's only not traded up twice in the first round. One was at Oliver at 9. The other one was Greg Rousseau. Was that pick 30 or 29, something like that, late first round? Yeah. So like, it's totally within what he does. So I think that they have an idea of what they want to get done with that first round pick. And if they feel good about that guy getting to them, they'll chill out. But if Bean starts to get antsy, we know he's going to trade up.
Yeah.
So, I think we should be mindful of that possibility.
Where are you on the old aged like philosophy of let the draft come to you and just take the best guy off the board? Even if you've got three or two centers, two starting caliber centers, take another one or quarterback. I mean, they always painted the Patriots as that team and it kind of fell off like over the last 15 years as Bill would just do weird things. But where are you at on that philosophy? I love this guy. I'm going to go get him no matter what versus letting the draft come to me.
Right. Yeah. I'm way more let the draft come to me. I think there's a level of arrogance involved with continuously trading up, like where you feel like, you know, like I'm going to go get this player. I'm going to sacrifice my opportunities to get other players because I think this one's the exact one that we need. Like I said earlier in our conversation, go look at the draft from 5 years ago. Just, I dare you, go look at it. And it's going to be, wow, none of these players are very good. So I want to give myself as many opportunities to be correct. And unless I'm trading up for a quarterback and I don't have one, I'm probably not ever going to trade up. If I was an actual NFL general manager, I would want to have as many darts as possible to throw at the board. Now, I'm not so BPA focused where I'm going to ignore a position of need to add something that I already have. Like, I'm definitely cognizant of that. And that's why my board, I have a vertical board because people demand you have a vertical board, but I wouldn't have one if people didn't want it so much.
I have
a horizontal board where it's okay, these are the top half of round one, back half of round one, second round grades, third round grades, fourth round grades, because I think you can split hairs. Like, I do have players stacked vertically, but sometimes those margins are so close and you wind up you're just not having good conversations,
right?
We're talking about fractions of a point. These are the players that are in this appropriate range that makes the most sense, and then from there I think you pick it. But I certainly way more aligned with letting it fall to me. There's too many examples of great picks, you know, throughout the draft. Not everybody's John Fina, a 10-year starter picked in the first round. That doesn't happen all the time. Sometimes it doesn't work out. You can find really good starters later in the draft and impact players all throughout the draft. I mean, literally just go through the position groups and you'll find that the best players are not necessarily all first round picks. And so I'm definitely in the category of letting it fall to me.
Very good.
I'm on your side on that. I'm on your side on that, Joe. You know, I just think that adding a layer to what you said, just the quality of players now between the first and the third round really is incredible. You know, the quality of training, the type of coaching that they get. You know, if you get the right person, the right attitude that fits with, you know, dare I say, culture, I think, you know, guys are easier to develop now than they were maybe 20 years ago. It's just, I look at the athletes that are out there now and it's astounding. And that just funnels right into the draft.
Yeah, super good.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. And you and I have had conversations. You told me about the nutrition and how different it is. You know what I mean? Like, these guys are absolutely equipped to maximize their physical potential. That puts them in a much better position to be successful players. And you can find them. I mean, you can absolutely find them throughout the entire draft. Give me as many chances as possible to get them. That's what I say.
Exactly. I agree. And that's a point too. When you trade up, you give up picks, right? And I would rather have a full camp and see, hey, did we get somebody in the fifth or seventh round that all of a sudden is just fits here, responds?
Christian Benford? Darrell Bernard? Exactly. Like Matt Milano?
Matt Milano, yep. Yep.
Right. Examples are endless. Jordan Poyer was a 7. Micah Hyde was a 5.
Like, Stephon Diggs is a 5.
What are we talking about?
Jerry Ostrowski was a 14. I remember seeing Jerry at the combine, Joe, and I was like, oh my God, this guy's a monster. This guy's amazing. Look at the size of him. And then that guy on the bench, Jerry Ostrowski, holy cow. And then I end up playing with the guy. I was like afraid of him at the combine. I'm like, oh my God, look at who am I?
I need to find somebody to validate this because I think Jerry Ostrowski is in a rare company.
Agreed.
He has multiple seasons as a primary starter at center, guard, and tackle. Mm-hmm. Who's ever done that in the history of the NFL?
The only one close, minus the center position, was Glenn Parker. Glenn fit across the entire line, played every position, you know. And the two of them had the same thing in common. On the snap of the ball, they got long, right? We talk about metrics all the time. You know, what's this guy's measurements? I don't care if you got 36-inch arms. If you're a T-Rex when the ball is snapped, yeah, it doesn't matter. Mm. But that blind faith, that belief of throwing those hands in on the snap of the ball, timing it up, and realizing that is the most vulnerable point. When you're extended all the way out there and doing it time and time again, because you know it's right, but the fear in the back of your brain is that you're going to miss or he's going to swipe you. You know, it's hard to overcome. And guys like Jerry and Glenn did it time after time.
Yeah.
John, have you watched this Washington tackle Troy Fatanu?
I've watched a little bit. He likes to get that left arm up a lot.
I don't think I've ever seen a guy vertical set and then charge. Like literally charge at the, you talk about taking the air out of pass pro. That guy is not interested in there being any space.
Well, you know, conceptually it's very good, right? Because we get a lot of speed to power moves right now, setup drive to the center of the chest. And if you're vertical setting and you have too much momentum, you know, your ass is too far back over your heels, you get pushed, right? So he gets into his set, he reads the speed to power move and then confronts it. And that's what I've always talked about with my boys is you've got to strike before they strike. You know, you've got to be able to read that downhill move and stop it, right? And I think this is like the next step on that where you're closing the distance because everything is about timing. Yeah. And if you give them too much time, then they have a three-way go, right? They go in, they go over, or they go through you.
Well, I've had two different conversations with two NFL offensive line coaches, and both of them said to me, we want the bull rush. Like we want to make ourselves big and invite that bull rush because we're 320 pounds and these guys are 270. Like, let's take it. The other thing that's interesting is I was at O-line Masterminds a couple of years ago, one of my favorite experiences of my life. I heard Teron Armstead and Lane Johnson do presentations on pass protection. And Teron Armstead got up there and said, if I don't have to touch you, like that's a win for me. Like, I want to block you without even putting my hands on you. Lane Johnson's like, no, I want my hands on you immediately. So it's funny how like it's the same. We're trying to get the same thing done, but there's so many different ways to do it, which to get it back to the Bills, that's what I love about Aaron Kromer, where he's willing to tailor the techniques based on the player and how it makes sense for them. Not just, okay, this is how we do it, which is kind of, I think that's why you've seen the Bills offensive line take off over the last couple of years.
Yeah, super good. We're having a great conversation with Joe Marino. I got one more question for you, Joe. But before we ask you that last question and we get you out of here, why don't you do everybody a real quick favor? Not that they don't already know, but where can people find your content? Where can they find you? How can they interact with you?
Yeah, appreciate that. Locked On Bills, daily podcast on the Buffalo Bills. It's on all the platforms. And also have a daily podcast on the NFL in general, Locked On NFL Scouting. So if you want to hear me talk more than just the Bills, I have that available for you. I guess if you follow me on, are we going with X? Are we calling it this?
Twitter forever.
Twitter
forever.
At the Joe Marino.
At the Joe Marino. Awesome. So this is, I'm going to corner you. I'm going to put you in a corner, which I know a lot of guys don't like, but what I'm looking for from you is your, he goes off screen immediately.
Okay, Joe, I have buttons I can push.
Joe's like, I'm out. what I'm looking for from you is cards on the table, everything you've heard, what you think, you know, what you feel, where the Bills are going. So for me, and I'll go first for me, I've heard stuff around town that the Bills are absolutely in love with Cooper DeJean. like enamored. And I think he fits that mold of what we've already talked about, that they fall in love with the guy and they do whatever they got to do to go get him. So for me, that's my, I don't think the Bills draft wide receiver first overall or first overall in the first round. I think that's their guy. So that's kind of the question that I would pose to you. Like, do you have a feeling? Do you have a sense? Do you not care?
Well, I care. Well, I care a lot. This is the marriage of my two passions, the NFL draft and the Buffalo Bills. I care. Exactly. And this is why I'm here. This is what got me into to football media. Is I watched a really bad Bills football team for a long time, and I the only thing I got excited about was the draft. Like, this is, I figured somehow right. We get some hits along the way here. You know, this is going right. to be better to watch on Sunday. So this is absolutely my passion. Man, I hate to give you more than one answer because I
you can. It's your show.
Well, it's not. It is your show and you gave me permission, so I'll take it. I think Cooper DeJean firmly in play. Absolutely, Joe Miller. I'm with you on that. I think Brian Thomas is firmly in play as well, and that would require a trade up. I am not dismissing Xavier Worthy out of Texas. You know, you heard Brandon Bean and Sean McDermott both talk about matchup problems, right? They want matchup problems, and right. Xavier right. Worthy, his speed, there's not a player in the league that can run with him. Not a single player that can run step for step with him. So you combine vertical receiving skill with yards after catch and you find a matchup problem. I think Xavier Worthy's firmly in play. So there's my three, and then Zach Frazier in the back of my mind as well.
Very good. Very good. Ladies and gentlemen, you have been tuned into On the Beat, brought to you exclusively on the Overreaction Sports Network. Awesome conversation, Joe. Thank you so much. We're doing the best we can to get people prepped for the draft, and we appreciate your time and your commitment to everything that you do. It's totally awesome. But for me, for John, for Jerry Ostrowski, for Joe Marino, everybody, go Bills.
Go Bills.
Go Bills.
Bills.